I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think we've got a great show for you tonight, jam-packed with information as usual. And I'd like to start off this evening by giving out a few toll-free numbers. Toll-free in Canada is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And in the U.S., it's toll-free 888-876-5227. 888-876-5227. 5227. Certainly appreciate callers calling in with questions over any of the material that we talk about on ET Yoga. And in a general sense, that's self-empowering information that's related to either extraterrestrial channelings or to the ancient yogic knowledge, and certainly any questions on self-realization or anything to do with consciousness are much appreciated. So if you've got something on your mind out there this evening and you'd like to call in, I'd certainly appreciate hearing from you. Now, this evening, I would like to start out with a couple of quotes from Bashar. And it seems over the past few weeks, I've sort of started out the program with quotes and a suggestion of a product, and then got into the heart of the material for this evening. And this evening's program will be centered about the true history of the Earth, continuing with Sal Rochelle's channeling of the Founders. But before we get started with that, I'd like to mention a quote from Bashar. You cannot experience what you're not the vibration of. Sounds like a good one to ponder. And another quote from Bashar. Trust in the idea of abundance. What you say, you are. What you say goes. Pay attention to what you say, because the universe is always listening. And with a Bashar connection, big-time connection, Daryl Anka, we've discussed several times on ET Yoga about the power of the heart and the brain in the heart. And current research has indicated that the heart actually puts out a frequency, a vibration, 5,000 times stronger than the brain. And tonight, I would like to share with you a channeling from Bashar through Daryl Anka that is called the Heart's Code. Your vibration radiates. There is now on your planet what you might call a new book, relatively speaking. Some of you may be familiar with it, some of you may not. Though we rarely recommend, we suggest that relative to the conversation we are having right now, you get it and read it. If you ponder its concepts, you will understand quite clearly what kind of impact each and every single one of you can have. That book is called The Heart's Code. The Heart's Code talks about the re-recognition that your heart has intelligence and that it actually communicates to every other heart, literally, electromagnetically. All your hearts right now are literally talking to one another. I am not making this up. It is not just a philosophical idea or a euphemism or a metaphor. Your hearts are talking to each other in electromagnetic pulses right now. You are sitting in each other, immersed in each other's expanding heart bubbles. Listen to this. Think about this. Picture this. Give energy to this. And you will see what kind of impact you have all the time. Every single beat of your heart sends out an electromagnetic 360-degree spherical bubble at the speed of light. an electromagnetic pulse 186,300 miles per second. That means instantly, nearly every single one of those bubbles pulsates around and through the entire planet from every single being on it. You are immersed in each other's heartbeats. When you begin to talk to your own heart, you will know how to talk to others, sometimes without saying a thing with your mouth or your brain, which sometimes is for the best, no offense. But you, each and every one of you, have been experiencing a war between your brains, your hearts, and your bodies. It is time to allow them their due, to allow them their own unique communication, and to function as a triad to work together harmoniously. The balancing of the heart, body, and mind is a matter of letting everything do its job and not more than its job. In that sense, the mind relates to the heart by doing the tasks that are specifically the domain and the talent of the mind, taking the heart's energy and applying it in reality in ways that allow you to have thoughts, but these thoughts need to be in agreement and in harmony with the heart's knowingness and the body's sensing, otherwise you are discordant. For example, the heart can feel something that the mind will think is not in the best interest of the mind, but it's up to the mind to accept the love from the heart, and then the mind will know how to fall into place properly. I'll give you an analogy of a visual idea that is representative of the balancing of the body, mind, and heart. The body is the colors of the spectrum, the seven colors of your visible spectrum of light. The brain is black and white. The heart is a combination of everything. The body, the mind, and the heart each has its own way of receiving information. The body senses vibration, resonance. That's how it gets its information. It senses. The brain gets its information by thinking, processing. The heart gets its information by knowing, feeling. Now, all of this contains resonance and vibration, of course, but it is different expressions of it. The heart can also be of assistance in the healing of the body. We recommend that you access the literature of research to know that there is intelligence and memory and energy and communication that comes from the heart as well as from the brain. By getting in touch with the intelligence of the heart and learning how to listen with and speak from and hear the dialogue of the heart, and this will go perhaps even further than anything towards healing. So listen to your heart and know what your heart tells you. When you find in your heart that you are whole, your body will be whole as well. The following is an exercise suggested by Bashar that uses the collective energy of the planet for balancing the heart, mind, and body. If you will allow yourself the opportunity, if you wish to find a body of water. It can be an ocean. It can be a lake. It can even be one of your swimming pools. The idea would be to allow yourself to immerse yourself, your body, in this water. It is not impossible that you can even do this in what you call one of your bathtubs, but the more room around you that you have, the better. And as you float in this water, attempt to do so on your back. If you have difficulty floating, you can use a device that floats, and you can lie on that device, be it a raft or board or flotation device, if that will help you. But be out in the water, whether you are physically in it or not, be surrounded by it. Allow yourself then to serenely float on your back. Be careful that you do not get burned. Allow yourself some time, maybe about 15 of your minutes, to close your eyes, go inward, relax, breathe, let everything go. Forget about your day-to-day world, just float, and surrender yourself to these energies, these currents, in the collective consciousness. Just open up to them in whatever way, shape, or form your imagination says is the easiest method for you. Imagine that you feel these energies coursing through you. Imagine that you see them. Imagine that you hear them. Whatever works best for you, any one or all of these or others will do. Just let your imagination be your guide as to how you feel like relating to this concept. And as you float there out in the water, feeling these currents going through you, Allow yourself in your serenity to get a sense of direction. Allow them to orient you. Some of you may begin to feel a tingling in your body, sometimes specifically in your sinus cavity area, due to the preponderance of the substance called magnetite in your sinuses, which actually aligns and orients you to the magnetic field of your planet. That will be involved, but what we are talking about here, of course, is more subtle energy. Let yourself begin to feel that it is orienting you to yourself, to your purpose, to your truth, to your natural consciousness. Let yourself feel. If you have been feeling out of sorts or out of alignment, harried, stressed, worried, finding yourself beset by difficulties or what you would define as problems, let yourself feel that this energy, this current, is bringing you back into true position like a compass needle. Imagine yourself like a compass needle. You don't actually have to find yourself pointing north, literally, but find your true north in yourself, your truth north for yourself. Whatever that feeling is, whatever that image may be, whatever that sound may be, whatever that thought may be, whatever that word may be that your imagination comes up with, that represents the knowingness that your heart, your mind, your soul, your spirit, your body, your existence is aligned, and that natural state wherein you can say without hesitation, this is how I want to feel all the time. This, therefore, is who I really am. This is the frequency of energy I operate best on. This is my creative energy. This is my natural self. In whatever way you wish to express it, when you allow yourself to feel that alignment, that moment, that vibration, that energy, then you have allowed yourself to take advantage of these currents in collective consciousness. That, regardless of what your personalities may resist in your day-to-day lives, regardless of the frustrations and the realignments you may think you experience, your natural proclivity, your natural inclination, is to actually allow yourself to float and align in the direction of love, of creativity. Allowing yourself to do that in this exercise will allow you, the more often you do it, to become more sensitive and more sensitized to picking up upon that exact and perfect frequency that is your true natural self. And that channeling was called the Heart's Code. And by the way, with respect to Bashar and giving recommendations towards either products or books, the list that I recall related to Bashar's recommendations are these. And that's over about a 20-year span. He's recommended this reading of the Heart's Code. He's recommended Destiny of Souls and Journey of Souls, the books. He's also recommended Cosmos, Cosmic Voyage, actually, is the name of the book. Cosmic Voyage is a book that was done through remote viewing that Bashar says is about 95% accurate. And it deals with a lot of subjects that really aren't touched upon very much in today's society. And another product that Bashar has recommended is the detoxing products from the American Botanical Pharmacy in California. And that's Dr. Schultz's American Botanical Pharmacy. And I've been a client of them for some time as well, and I certainly give them my highest recommendation as well. And primarily with respect to the detoxing formulas in their liver, kidney, gallbladder, colon, brain, the detoxing materials, and also the superfood, which contains all the natural minerals and vitamins that are necessary to put the body in optimum immune functioning operation. And so I certainly give my highest recommendation there as well. Now for the heart of the program this evening, we started last week with the first two parts on the true history of the Earth, and that was the channeling by Sal Rochelle from the Founders. And I'd like to continue now with Earth History Part 3. Greetings again, beloved creators. We are continuing our discourse on Earth history. We hope you were able to follow yesterday's lesson. It's a hard one to comprehend for most Earth souls because there are multiple energy streams happening simultaneously, evolution, devolution, and constancy at very high levels. Today we will actually get down to the historical events of your timeline. And we and the channel have mentioned many times previously, time is fluid and not set in stone as your rational minds would have you believe. Therefore, much of what we chronicle for you is subject to change. Although the physical events have Akashic imprints and will continue to exist on one of your past timelines, you as a species have the capabilities of changing your timelines to better suit your evolution. We will address that subject in greater depth at another time. We are not fond of issuing disclaimers in our communications because we want our words and ideas to stand simply as they are, without embellishment or compromise. However, it might be useful to point out that some of the ideas presented herein will echo what has been brought forth in your mythological and religious teachings, and some of it will likely contradict the writings and teachings you are already familiar with. We are not here to convert anyone to a particular way of thinking or convince you of anything. We ask that you remain open to our viewpoint of creation, perhaps realizing that we have a broader perception than most entities that have visited your world. How's that for a modest disclaimer? There have been four major civilizations and a lot of minor ones on your planet since the grand experiment began unfolding here. Pangaea, Lemuria, Atlantis, and the present. In addition, there have been two major events in your solar system that dramatically impacted the history of your world. A, the destruction of Maldek, and B, the destruction of the surface of Mars. We are simplifying the story considerably because there were numerous other events, some of which we will be going into in detail. These would include what your religious writings call the Luciferian Rebellion, which we refer to as the Orion Invasion, the infusion of the Alpha Draconians, reptilians, the reign of the Syrians, your biblical and pre-biblical times, and the quiet invasion of the Zeta Reticulans, Greys. Keep in mind that these are only the major ET infusions. There were many others, including input from certain Andromedan sectors, various levels and dimensions of Pleiadian groups, Venusians, Arcturians, Antarians, and others from Polaris, Alpha Centauri, and many other regions. Add to this the overseeing of your progress by the Councils of Alcyon, the Great White Brotherhood, the Confederations of Light and their offshoots, Ashtar, Solar Cross, etc., and the many interplanetary priesthoods, Melchizedek, Metatron, Enoch, etc., and you have quite a bowl of porridge on the cosmic stove. Well, as you say, let's get on with it. Let's start with Pangaea. We briefly talked about this civilization yesterday in Part 2, but let's put it into the historic timeline. The land of Pan was the pinnacle of success regarding the experimentation and interbreeding of various DNA strains. This was the paradise, or Garden of Eden, written about in your religious books. Most of the Earth was tropical jungle during the period from 200 million to 20 million years ago. You can see evidence of this by examining the geological formations, particularly in your desert areas. For example, the barren desert area known as the Petrified Forest in northeastern Arizona was once dense jungle. Many areas, including your favorite hotspot, Sedona, was underwater for much of that time. In other words, your world was bathed in water and dense vegetation in most areas. Even the polar regions were teeming with life. The humanoid form was seated on your planet approximately 100 million years ago, right in the middle of this jungle period. There were small groups of humanoids confined to relatively small areas of your world. These humanoids were seventh density beings with wings and highly developed telepathic and psychic abilities. They lived in paradise. They were loving and cooperative and communicated with the exotic plant and animal life that abounded everywhere. They extracted their food directly from sunlight and assimilated water through their pores. They had need of nothing but each other. This is a rough equivalent of what you call the Garden of Eden in your religious writings. The life forms during that time were varied and plentiful. About 60 million years ago, the dinosaurs were killed off when the comet Arunhataq made its 10,500-year cycle and came too close to Earth on its particular pass. This resulting cool down destroyed a large part of the vegetation, but the Earth, in her amazing regenerative ways, was able to bounce back, and another fertile period ensued. There were only a few hundred thousand humanoid forms on Earth at that time, and most of them retreated underground, and with the help of various Pleiadian factions, created a subterranean world of great beauty and intricacy. This is where the legends of an inner Earth came from. We will talk about that at a later time. Most of the life forms of Pan were exotic and do not exist today. There are legends of a few of them, including the Pegasus and Centaur, no relation to Alpha Centaurians, and some of the creatures were descendants of the dinosaurs and early reptiles. The dragons got their folklore from two sources, Pangaea and the Draconian invasion. The early dragons were reptilian creatures that evolved along with the dinosaurs and were genetically manipulated by us and other ET groups. Later, the Draconians came to Earth with their own reptilian form and began interbreeding and creating exotic dragon forms. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. The fall of Pangaea was the original fall from grace, as chronicled in your writings. This occurred when the sons of God, the seventh density Pleiadians, incarnated into the humanoid forms evolving on Earth and forgot their divine connection. The humanoid forms, before the incarnation of the seventh density Pleiadians, had a rudimentary consciousness somewhere between second and third density. Your evolutionary scientists see the change brought about by the Pleiadian incarnations as an unexplained mutation that marks the difference between apes and humans. The incarnated Pleiadian humans interbred with the various creatures, hence the half-horse, half-man, and many others. The fairy kingdom was one of the offshoots of this interbreeding. Seventh-density souls took on a humanoid form that had wings. When they interbred with the four-legged creatures, one of the results was the Pegasus, or winged horse. As the humanoid Pleiadian souls dropped in vibration, their wings became atrophied, along with their telepathic and other abilities. They became more and more like the creatures evolving on Earth, more animalistic in nature and less able to formulate higher intellectual reasoning abilities. All this continued until approximately 10 million years ago, when the end of the cosmic cycle occurred and the electromagnetic polarities shifted. At that time, great storms raged across the Earth as a result of the changing electromagnetic frequencies. A flood wiped out most of the creatures residing on the Earth. This is referred to in your religious writings as the Great Flood. At that time, most of the Earth became covered in water, with a few remnants of land and life remaining here and there. And this is the end of part three. We are the Founders. The Founders, part four. The channel wanted to make sure we let everybody know that all our messages will be contained in a book at some point. What is your Earth expression? Don't hold your breath waiting. Okay, we're trying to have a sense of humor here. Apparently, writing a book takes a fair amount of concentration and such. The actual receiving of the information is quite straightforward, but it is the preparation, editing, and production of the book that requires the energetic output. At any rate, today we examine the major wars and infusions of souls onto your world that mark the beginning of what you call violence and conflict. For many of you, this will not be a pretty picture. But I suspect most of you are mature souls now and can handle a little unpleasantry amidst all the glorious creation. Your Earth was not the only planet in your system that received ET attention. 10 million years ago, there were three planets that harbored life forms, Earth, Mars, and Maldek. These were the third, fourth, and fifth planets from your sun at that time. Yes, the environment on the fourth and fifth planets was colder and less hospitable than on Earth, but that did not stop the ETs from colonizing these worlds. Those that came to Mars and Maldek were adventurous sorts, willing to endure the harsh winters and barren landscapes that dotted these planets, although there were forests and plant life in the equatorial regions and plenty of water and ice in the polar regions. Many of those souls that perished during the Great Flood of Earth reincarnated on Mars and Maldek. The civilizations already developing on those worlds were from many different star systems, and now the Pleiadian root race joined the mix. As you can imagine, the beings now residing on those worlds had dropped in vibration to the fourth density. souls born into a fourth density world did not receive the same kind of loving attention that souls in seventh density experience. These outer planets were therefore a repository for a bizarre array of thought forms and thought creations, thereby resulting in a rich and varied astral realm, the realm of thought creation, imagination, and the dream state. Throughout this period, many beings from across the galaxy had taken notice of the Earth experiment and its neighboring planets. A group of souls from the Draco star system sent scout craft to Earth about 40 million years ago, and again roughly 1 to 2 million years before the Great Flood, about 12 million years ago. Although they did not settle in mass, their reports back to the Draconian councils put Earth, Mars, and Maldek on the map for exploration and possible conquest. Another group from the constellation of Orion also took notice of the fledgling Earth souls and their compatriots on Mars and Maldek. We of the 7th and 12th densities were still monitoring the Earth experiment closely, and these less savory civilizations from Orion and Draco were not able to gain a foothold on Earth due to our careful observation. It would have been like marching into our laboratory and announcing they were taking over the experiment. We had a protective vibration around the Earth, and things like this didn't happen, at least not at that time. However, the same protections were not afforded Mars and Maldek because, quite frankly, that was not our terrain. These planets were more of a free-for-all, and so come they did, in small numbers at first, as scouts and small settlements amidst the existing communities. Once interbreeding began to occur, the souls from Orion and Draco began incarnating as well. The Draco reptilian form found it hard to adapt to the Mars and Maldek environments, and reincarnation became the preferred method of infusing oneself into these worlds. Both the Orion and Draco systems had a wide variety of conscious beings, and the explorers who settled on Mars and Maldek were quite aggressive and warrior-like in their mentality. Their main purpose in coming to Earth's solar system was conquest and mining of natural resources, basically anything that would give them power and prestige. These souls had long ago forgotten their connection to Source and felt they needed to take from others in order to feel whole and complete. It was not long before war started to break out on Mars and Maldek. Due to Mars's proximity to Earth and the watchful gaze of our members, the Orions and Draconians were less willing to reincarnate in mass numbers on Mars. They preferred the relative distance of Maldek. They began coming in record numbers, and pretty soon the Maldekian civilization numbered in the millions of souls. They built great cities out of stone, and in matching their consciousness, these cities had great fortresses and towers to afford protection from attack. At some point, the Maldekian peoples discovered neutron technology and began manufacturing bombs and wartime implements. At that time, several million years ago, there were no safeguards in place to prevent the runaway consequences of this technology. Although the Maldekian civilization began over 10 million years ago in Earth time, it continued to evolve into a series of warring factions. This warring attracted the attention of both benevolent and malevolent ET groups from various systems around the galaxy. But because of the non-interference agreement and protection of free will, little was done to intervene. About 3,200,000 years ago, the conflicts escalated and the neutron weapons were deployed. It was supposed to be a limited nuclear exchange between two of the warring factions. At this point, the DNA of the souls were a mixture of Draconian and Orion strands, both of which contained the aggressive genes. Each side in this conflict, although both sides had similar DNA, wanted to outdo the other, and the weapons grew increasingly larger and more numerous. The first exchange only destroyed a few thousand humanoids. The side most damaged would rebuild and retaliate, each time with greater devastation. Although it seemed to be discovered by accident, a particularly powerful neutron bomb was developed using a rare combination of elemental catalysts. The scientists involved in its development did not realize the extent of its destructive capabilities. This weapon was fired at a military base hidden underground in enemy territory. Within this base were hundreds of neutron weapons. The enemy, realizing the bomb was coming, attempted to get their base weapons airborne. Several dozen of the several hundred weapons were launched and exploded in the sky, creating a brilliant flash. However, they were unable to intercept the oncoming, more powerful weapon, and it entered the silos of the enemy and simultaneously ignited over 200 weapons buried in the ground. The combination of the explosion of the more powerful weapon and the 200 conventional nuclear weapons resulted in a powerful earthquake that tore apart the planet of Maldek and eventually broke it into hundreds of fragments, which became the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Over 10 million souls perished in the blast, and these souls later reincarnated on Mars. We and the other benevolent groups were horrified at what happened and petitioned the Godhead for a greater level of intervention to prevent this from ever happening again. The resulting blast altered the orbits of Mars and Earth and severely disrupted the etheric bases on Jupiter and Saturn. A wave of electromagnetic disruption went out from the solar system, and beings from all over the galaxy took notice. A council was convened in the Alcyon system, home of the Great White Brotherhood, and it was established that no more complete planetary destruction would be allowed anywhere in the galaxy. This is the end of part four from The Founders. Going on to part five. I trust you have found our series so far to be full of intriguing ideas. Has it brought up more questions than it has answered? If so, that's okay. Keep in mind that we are touching upon only the most basic of events and situations and offering our perspective on the dance of duality as it has unfolded over millions of years. Some of you have been asking about the Orions and Draconians, Dracos. We have not gone into detail on these groups because it is not necessary. Suffice to say, our original DNA experiment sort of went astray, to use your earthly language. Other laboratory technicians and inventors came into the lab in the middle of the night and trashed our experiment and stole our samples and did their own experiments on them and started their own laboratories. Do you like our analogy? We have studied your language and customs for a long time and seem to know how to use the vernacular of your time to make our points. The Earth experiment can be best understood, however, if we continue our saga back in time to just after the destruction of Maldek. Over 10 million souls lost their bodies during the destruction of Maldek. Most of these souls took up residence on Mars. And by the way, an insert here is the Bashar's suggestion of reading Cosmic Voyage. Goes into some specifics on reincarnation from Mars and the connection with Earth. So most of these souls took up a residence on Mars, where a civilization was already in progress. The souls on Mars at that time were a product of our experimentation, along with groups from many different systems, including Orion and Alpha Draconis. Those groups left their mark many times along your evolutionary spiral, but never to a sufficient degree as to seriously alter your DNA blueprint, at least not yet. The souls from Maldek incarnated in the usual manner through breeding among the Pleiadian, Orion, and Draconian lineage of Mars. The civilization on Mars grew significantly in numbers until there were over 100 million souls. We will not go into the principles of soul fragmentation at this time, but suffice to say that the 10 million souls from Maldek fragmented into approximately 50% of the Mars population within a period of only a few thousand years. As the population grew on Mars, the fragile atmosphere became strained. Due to their distance from the Sun, both Mars and Maldek had thin and delicate atmospheres that could not take the strain of large populations, not to mention nuclear weapons. As the Mars civilization continued to grow, unrest between the various factions grew, especially since many of the Maldekian souls had not learned the lessons of war and had left their bodies suddenly during the catastrophic events there. Although most souls are counseled in between lifetimes, there was still a policy of non-interference except to prevent another planetary explosion, and so Mars's inhabitants were pretty much left on their own as long as they did not develop weapons sufficient to destroy the entire planet. The explosion of Maldek had altered the orbit of Mars and changed the EM frequency band significantly. The climate changed and great canals were built to transport water from the tropical and polar regions into the desert intermediate zones. As the climate continued to become more unstable, wars broke out over water rights, and eventually conventional weapons began proliferating. A form of dirty atomic bombs were developed, using heavy metals, uranium, plutonium, etc., and a war broke out using these weapons. Many souls were warned by members of the Brotherhood of Light, later the Confederation of Planets, and were assisted in building underground shelters and eventually underground cities. The Brotherhood and its related organizations neutralized many of the weapons to prevent a repeat of the Maldek experience. Nevertheless, the Martians blew holes in their atmosphere and severely disrupted the ecological balance to the point of rendering most surface life forms extinct. Some survivors of the atomic bomb blast made their way underground and joined those already there. Once underground, they continued to rebuild their civilization until a new level of order emerged. Of the approximately 100 million surface souls, about 10 million survived and went underground. To prevent further attacks, the underground cities of Mars were sealed off from the outside world, and scientists managed to create an artificial environment capable of sustaining up to 20 million souls. Over time, great dust storms spread across the surface of Mars and eroded most of the cities and their architecture. Remaining to this day are a few pyramids and rectangular buildings, enough to remind your scientists that there was once life there, although such information has been suppressed from the populace. As for the underground cities, they still exist and are still inhabited to this day, but have evolved into fourth density and are not visible to most who inquire. Your scientists will discover some radioactivity on Mars that cannot be explained solely by natural rock formations. This is the residue of the atomic explosion, since some of the elements used have a half-life of millions of years. What happened to the 90 million or so souls that did not go underground? You guessed it. They migrated to Earth and reincarnated into the melting pot of Pleiadian, Orion, Draconian, and other groups that had reorganized since the destruction of Pan. And moving on to part 6 from the Founders. Today's discourse begins a new level of information that comes with a disclaimer. The material given in this discourse and the ones that follow is based on information that has been heavily suppressed by certain powers and influences that have been in control of your planet for a very long time. It is our intention to reveal the information that has been suppressed and to do so in the clearest and most accurate way possible. We are not aware of any souls in earthly embodiment that have disseminated this information in the past with 100% accuracy. This is due to the difficulty involved in extracting the information from the Akashic records. Although all information in the universe is freely available to anyone who sincerely requests it, only those souls that are no longer able to be influenced by the councils of Rigel and the Draconian councils have been successful in getting through the system of distortion placed in the ethers about your planet. In some of your channeled writings, this etheric distortion is referred to as the frequency barrier. Until recently, we have not been allowed by the Godhead to tamper with this etheric distortion field. It has only been since about 1950 AD in your timeline that divine intervention has included the ability to remove etheric distortion fields from your planetary sphere. In later discourses, we will examine the levels of veiling put upon your vibratory sphere and the reasons for each veil. Some of the veils are a naturally occurring phenomenon related to the drop in vibration experienced by seventh density souls on their way to experience third density reality. Others were placed intentionally by various benevolent factions in order to prevent the so-called dark forces from gaining too much power and thereby violating the free will of ascending souls. Other veils were placed intentionally by so-called dark forces in order to prevent ascending souls from gaining enough power to put an end to Orion, Draco, and Sirian involvement with Earth. Since there are apparently no earthly souls that have been able to extract all this information successfully, we caution that this channel may not be able to extract all the information. Sal Rishel and the Founders make no guarantees of complete accuracy for any of the channeled information given here. We urge extreme discernment when viewing any channeled material and would encourage you to be wary of any channeled material that claims to be 100% accurate. That said, we need to lay some groundwork for what is about to be discussed. The Luciferian Rebellion is discussed at length in some of your religious writings, including a highly distorted book called Urantia that used to be to the best of our knowledge, was brought to Earth by the Councils of Andromeda. The information contained in that book was offered by various entities in the Andromedan Councils who attempted to access the Akashic records during the period 10 million BC to the time of Jesus Christ. Some of the information is accurate and useful, but the Andromedan entities were unable to pierce some of the veils surrounding the period detailed in these discourses. Therefore, many of these entities relied on second-hand information given them by various members of the Councils of Betelgeuse and members of Sirius A and Sirius B who were participants in the Earth experiment during the time periods covered herein. Many of the archangels and ascended masters had accurate information pertaining to that time period, but were not allowed to disseminate the information due to violations of free will and non-interference. The energy transmissions of our group, the Founders, and several other high-density groups are sufficiently able to pierce all the veils, regardless of who or what put them in place. There are certain visualizations and DNA code patterns associated with the stargates and portals that must be assessed in order to pierce the veils. The ancient mystery schools existing at various times on your planet were set up primarily to move souls along the spiritual path to the point of being able to access these stargates and portals. The system of initiations and rituals given through such secret and not-so-secret orders as the Brotherhood of Masons, the Rosy Cross, Rosicrucians, the Order of the White Rose, and the Order of the Purple Rose were for the express purpose of teaching souls to pierce the veils. In the beginning of these organizations, a number of souls attained knowledge of the stargates and portals and were able to pierce some of the veils. However, these souls were not evolved spiritually to the point of being able to remain pure in heart and mind, and many misused the information given. Due to lack of discernment, they gave the DNA codes to various negatively polarized ET groups, which enabled these groups to enter the stargates and portals and wreak havoc in the astral and etheric planes of Earth. These entities merged their DNA codes with the codes of evolving Earth souls, both directly through energy transmissions and through mass incarnations, thereby corrupting the original intent of the secret and not-so-secret mystical orders. All of the mystery schools mentioned above, and several others, have been infiltrated by negatively polarized ET factions, and as a result, the leader of these organizations are controlled largely by the ego-based desire for power and control over others. The ego-based lust for power and control can be very devious and subtle, masquerading as one-upsmanship and spiritual pride at having achieved this level or that level in the organization. With each level attained, the individual accumulates a greater degree of responsibility for the functioning of the organization and regulation of its members. This is especially dangerous when the ego is in charge. There have been numerous well-meaning world leaders who have gotten caught up in these negatively polarized energy fields while still believing they are doing the work of God. This is one of the reasons certain elements of this information have not been revealed until this time. We, the Founders, are confident that there are now enough souls, pure in heart and mind, that would not, under any circumstances, misuse the information that we are giving through several channels at this time, including this one. We are not giving actual DNA code configurations during the current transmission, but we are giving the energy patterns necessary to pierce the veils. Some souls who attune to these messages will be sufficiently evolved to be able to pierce the veils directly. Others will need the proper DNA keys and codes, which will be given later. It is not our intent to withhold any information that is needed by your planetary lightworkers. However, even at our level of awareness and vibration, we have made what you would call errors of judgment in times past that particularly led to the current situation on Earth. To the best of our knowledge, there are no ET groups or channeled entities that are immune to these errors of judgment. Free will is a complicated and challenging principle at all levels of evolution. While we thoroughly understand the mechanics of free will, we use the utmost caution and respect when making decisions that affect the free will of millions of Earth souls. Up until about 1950 AD, there were virtually no controls in place to prevent the light and dark factions from battling it out to the bitter end. With the advent of nuclear weaponry, all that changed, and the Godhead issued the decree of divine intervention that most of you now know about, allowing direct intervention in certain matters. When it was determined that such intervention would prevent the violation of free will of a large number of Earth souls, once souls on your planet reach an inner vibratory rate of fifth density awareness, their well-being is protected by our dispensations as carried out faithfully according to divine principle. One of your scientists, a Dr. Hawkins, devised a vibratory scale that is rather crude but somewhat useful, and we will use that scale to make our point here. Those souls whose inner calibration level is 500 or above, or whose outer calibration level is 400 or above, automatically enter a protective field of energy generated by our members and certain other high-density groups involved in implementing the divine dispensation. At this time, there are approximately 16 million souls on your planet vibrating at or above the levels indicated. Keep in mind, beloved creators, this is not a pecking order or a device with which to feel more or less worthy. All of God's creations are worthy. Everyone on your planet deserves God's love. There is not one soul unworthy of being saved. Anyway, this is not about being saved. This is about being granted access to the stargates and portals necessary to assist humanity in breaking free of the effects of the Luciferian rebellion, which we shall discuss in a moment. Only those souls with pure minds and hearts are being allowed to access the sacred DNA keys and codes and enter the stargates and portals responsible for maintaining the veils of illusion on your planet. Any soul who sincerely desires to be free can and will be free. This is divine law. Ask and ye shall receive is as valid today as it was in the time of Jesus. However, there are certain safeguards built into the ethers and astral regions of your planet that were necessary in order to respect the free will of souls evolving on your world. We will have more to say on this later, but at this point we will get on with your history. The pre-Lemurian period on your world corresponds roughly to 10 million BC until about 1 million BC. During that time, your world slowly recovered from the Great Flood and life forms began to proliferate once again. After the destruction of Maldek and the atmosphere of Mars, many of those souls came to Earth and reincarnated, dramatically raising the population. Earth was once again mainly a tropical jungle with about 90% water cover, and only the polar regions were cool by comparison. Like attracts like, and as the souls from Maldek and Mars continued coming to the Earth, the vibratory rate of Earth dropped to match their vibrations. When the awareness level of Earth dropped below fifth density, souls from neighboring systems were able to access the stargates and portals surrounding Earth, which were not regulated at that time except by the law of attraction. Although the Orions and Draconians already had a foothold on Earth, they came by leaps and bounds once the vibration dropped below fifth density. That is the end of part six. And for part seven, up until about 500,000 years ago in your timeline, Earth continued to attract more and more souls from across the universe. The vibratory level of these souls was generally fourth density, meaning that they were subject to the astral and etheric distortions inherent within that level of vibration. The genetics were now a blend of many races, but the Orions gradually began to dominate. War between Rigel and Betelgeuse had made life rather intolerable for many Orions, and Earth was seen as a place to begin life anew. Unlike the Dracos, the Orions were able to easily land directly on the Earth, in addition to coming through the incarnational process, and so their numbers increased significantly faster than the Dracos, whose reptilian bodies had a hard time adjusting to Earth's atmosphere and gravity. We, the Founders, observed with dismay what was going on, but because we were not allowed to interfere, we were like lab technicians watching a specimen multiply out of control and doing nothing to contain it. A group of archangels and ascended beings from 7th, 8th, and 9th density were also watching the Earth. Several of these beings are well known to Earth's people, including Archangel Michael. An ascended being that was later given the name Lucifer was among those watching the progress of Earth. Lucifer devised a plan to lessen the chaos on Earth by teaching Earth souls how to control their emotions and use their intellectual capabilities so they would not be as easily swayed by the negatively polarized factions. Lucifer mistakenly attributed the decaying situation on Earth to unbridled emotions and passion. A group of souls headed by Lucifer came to Earth and established a series of mystery schools designed to train souls in suppressing and controlling the emotional body. The plan backfired because as the students learned to suppress their emotions, their souls became more and more fragmented until their vibration dropped below fourth density into third density. Suppressing any part of the self results in a loss of power and awareness. The shaming of emotion in men, Victorian suppression of sexual desire, and the making of feelings wrong all had their origin in Lucifer's philosophy. Archangel Michael, seeing what was happening on Earth, found that he could sit by no longer simply watching, and so he headed a group of ascended beings who voluntarily dropped their vibration and came to Earth, establishing another mystery school designed to raise the vibrations of souls back into the light. Once Michael and his group arrived on Earth, the vibrations were so dense that he and his band of celestial helpers became caught in the game of duality and started seeing the negatively oriented factions as evil forces to be overcome. Thus, these archangels reinforced the concept of light versus dark on your world. Michael took the side of the light, and many members of the councils of Rigel, as well as most of the Dracos, took the polarity of the dark. Meanwhile, Lucifer and his group maintain their cool, calm aloofness, becoming armchair strategists, watching with interest the battles taking shape. He became so fascinated with this drama of duality that he began building up both sides, though training the light and dark forces to fight each other in the interest of seeing who would be supreme victors. The missing ingredient in all of this was compassion. Lucifer taught the soldiers on the battlefield to suppress their emotions and become hardened to misery and suffering. Archangel Michael taught the soldiers to be passionate and forceful in overcoming the dark forces. When Lucifer saw what Michael was doing, he turned his attention from the Orions and waged war on Michael's forces, and a great battle ensued in the astral and etheric planes above Earth. This became known as the War in the Heavens. Michael's forces were passionate about becoming victors over darkness. Lucifer's forces were cool, calm, and intellectual and waged their wars through cunning strategy. The third force in all this, the negatively polarized Orions and Draconians, proliferated as their primary foes were now at war with each other. The War in the Heavens lasted about 1,000 years, taking place roughly 500,000 BC, during the period from 1 million BC until 500,000 BC. The population of Earth grew from about 200 million to almost a billion people. Because the wars were largely off-planet and did not significantly impact the surface of the Earth or the subterranean cultures, the population did not drop that much during the Luciferian Rebellion. Most of the surface fighting was regional and involved conventional weapons. After about 1,000 years of fighting, a truce was declared, and Lucifer and his group agreed not to promote overt aggression against anyone in the Earth system. Michael realized the futility of fighting the darkness, and also the futility of trying to overcome the suppression of emotional energy by force, and withdrew back into the celestial realms to integrate the lessons learned. Between 500,000 BC and 200,000 BC, life gradually evolved on Earth, and a few souls recaptured their fourth density awareness and began learning how to live cooperatively. During this same period, many more souls came from all over the galaxy, and Earth truly became a melting pot. However, the biggest groups were still the Orions from Betelgeuse and Rigel. During the Luciferian Rebellion, the Councils of Betelgeuse sided with Michael and the Light Forces, while the Councils of Rigel sided with the Dark Forces. Although there was very little overt hostility during the transition time following the rebellion, both Orion groups generally confined their breeding to their respective polarities, thereby retaining their DNA structure. The Betelgeuse factions remained more peaceful, while the Rigel factions continued to be domineering and aggressive. The pinnacle of population during these times reached almost 1.5 billion, just before a grand cycle around 200,000 BC. The first period of Lemuria started about 200,000 BC, after one of the grand cycles of 25,920 years had completed. This particular shift wiped out about half of the Earth population through massive earthquakes. The EM shift caused certain lands to break up and move apart, and one landmass became particularly fertile ground for the development of a rather benign civilization. Souls who were attracted to this landmass were generally peaceful people, some originating in the Pleiadian sector and some from the Sirius and Orion. This continent became roughly the size of Australia and was located almost on the same longitude but a bit further north. What most historians do not realize is that civilization continued on the other continents during the first period of Lemuria, even though the vibration of the other continents was not as refined as it was on Lemuria. The first Lemurian civilization was later called the Land of Mu. It consisted of nearly 500 million souls at its pinnacle. About three grand cycles later, the EM fluctuations were such that another catastrophe ensued, and all the land masses except Lemuria became flooded. Most of the souls who perished in the surrounding continents migrated or reincarnated on Lemuria, and the population of Lemuria began to skyrocket. This became the second Lemurian period. The period was roughly from 122,000 BC until about 100,000 BC. At the height of the second Lemurian civilization, the population again reached almost a billion people. These souls were not technologically oriented, but were tribal in nature, enjoying music and rhythm, and living in large cities along the coasts. Around 100,000 BC, the comet Anunnaki made a particularly close approach to Earth, and the tail brushed the atmosphere, causing dramatic cooling. The Lemurian people were used to the warm tropical climate, and all of a sudden the temperature dropped 50 degrees Fahrenheit in literally hours, freezing most of them. Those who knew what was coming fled to the sea. Many walked into the sea and drowned. A few tried to build undersea cities, but were largely unsuccessful. There were many legends of the sea that originated during this period. The Lemurian landmass eventually sank beneath the sea due to EM storms and followed the passage of the comet. There were only a handful of survivors, and they migrated to what is now South America and Australia, and later Hawaii and the Philippines. What has not been revealed before and what has been heavily suppressed on Earth is that the Alpha Draconians were behind the unusually close passage of the comet. Through a series of nuclear explosions in space, they deliberately forced the trajectory of the comet closer to the Earth in order to destroy the civilizations there. The plan was to wipe out the existing life on the Earth and then land and claim the Earth for themselves. They were particularly successful in this regard, but landing in their native bodies on Earth was a whole lot harder than incarnating into millions of already existing bodies. Suffice to say that they had a hard time surviving in their reptilian bodies due to the unfavorable gravity and mixture of gases in the atmosphere. Their native bodies mutated and grew in size as they adapted, although their overall numbers remained small. This was the main period that gave rise to the legends of dragons roaming the Earth. The Draconians, not to be defeated that easily, spent long years in laboratories aboard their spacecraft splicing and mutating various DNA samples until they came up with a human Draco hybrid. The secret involved ejecting reptilian DNA into the cerebellum section of the brain, where it quickly mutated the entire system. This part of the human is still called the reptilian brain. While the characteristics of this part involve aggressive and competitive behavior and the fight-or-flight syndrome designed to protect the organism, these characteristics, when combined with Orion DNA, became especially potent and dominated the entire organism. Today, about 80% of the DNA in humans is Orion in origin, or maybe we should say Orion-Draco hybrid. What is commonly thought to be human nature is the result of this DNA manipulation by the Draconians and subsequent incarnation by the Orions. As stated in this channel's earlier works, our original DNA blueprint that we were so proud of was reduced to less than 20% of the overall makeup of human beings. Due to the low survival rate of the Draconians after the destruction of Lemuria, the percentage of humans with true reptilian DNA on Earth has remained rather low. Most of the settling of the Earth after 100,000 BC and before Atlantis was done on the councils of Rigel and councils of Betelgeuse from Orion. Note that long after the wars in the Orion sector came to an end over 100,000 years ago, many of the factions that migrated to Earth continued to stay locked in battle mentally to the present day. As you can see by looking around, this trait ranges from civilized militarism and fervent patriotism to overt hostility and barbaric customs. That's the end of part 7 and the end of ET Yoga for tonight. And I hope you join us next week for the last parts of the true history of the Earth. And I'm wishing you all full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. Good night. See you next week.
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of